You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. Brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the world's finest bookmaker, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary. To celebrate the launch of Nick Luck Daily, Fitzdares have a special sign-up offer that will double your winnings on your first bet up to a £50 stake. Just go to www.fitzdares.com/luck to sign up. Hi there, welcome to Nick Luck Daily and our final show of the week. And I hope you've enjoyed the week as well. I think you'll agree we've had some fantastic guests. We've been bringing you the latest news and sharpest insight from around the racing world. And 3 or 4 weeks into this show, your support has meant the world. It's Friday, July the 24th. Britain and Ireland getting steadily busier now with an almost normal 6 fixtures across the two nations today. The King George tomorrow at Ascot, Group 1 action at the Curragh on Sunday, superb Saturday racing at York as well, and Goodwood to enjoy next week. But every silver lining has a cloud, it seems, at the moment, and last night the news broke that the Derby has lost its long-standing sponsor as financial giant Investec has pulled out 6 years before the end of its contract, having supported the race with considerable gusto since it took over from Vodafone in 2009. In a moment, we will be hearing from renowned financial journalist Jeff Randall, also a board member at Sandown Racecourse, and Jono Spence, representing Investec. But first joining me to discuss is Rishi Prasad. Rishi, how worried should we be that racing has lost the sponsor of its flagship event?
Lucky, I think it's a serious worry. The fact that, from what I've read about the decision, that it's not really a COVID-related decision, and that it is one taken with a marketing hat on, is a huge worry. They're 6 years short of their agreement. 2026 is when the sponsorship was due to run out. And the fact that racing and sport in general for Investec, let's not just specifically talk about racing, it's a huge strategy they're going through with their company. It's a massive worry, especially at this time where racing is on the back foot, suffering from lower prize money, owners complaining every week. Last week, you asked about racing being at breaking point. Well, the fact that our flagship race is now without a sponsor who'd had a deal until 2026 is a huge blow.
I'm not sure whether it's a coincidence that I always deploy my sunniest correspondent when the worst news is breaking. Somehow it just makes it not feel so bad. But realistically, what sort of company does racing need to sponsor this race in order for the race's brand to stay robust?
You and I know that one of the benefits of Vodafone, one of the reasons why Vodafone, I'm not so sure about Eveready as they were a little bit before my time, but Vodafone and Investec, one of the things that racing benefited from was the fact that they had important people at the top of their official tree that loved horse racing. And racing was able to benefit from a very valuable sponsorships. The concern is that at the moment, with racing in the position that it is, and with the economic climate for the country and for the world at the moment, that the idea of sponsoring something as significant as the Derby is going to take a lot of marketing money to do. I think racing needs to perhaps, I don't want to use the word lower, well, I'm going to say it anyway, lower its sights and not be too ambitious in trying to find a sponsor outside of the sport and not a bookmaker, because that would be for the race's luster, the best thing, if we can show that the race has an appeal outside of racing. But I don't think that's something that we should be too concerned about, certainly in the short term, because of the economic climate that we are all in worldwide. And I think that if a bookmaker wanted to do it, then it ought to be fine, at least in the short term, as I say. But long term, ideally, long term, I think a sponsor outside of racing would be fantastic for the Derby, for its position that we all hold it in as the key race of the year.
The well-known horse racing consultant Jono Spence has been Investec's sponsorship representative across a range of sports. I spoke to him a little earlier and I began by asking him how he reacted to the news.
Morning, Nick. It's obviously very sad news, but Investec have been a sponsor for 12 years, and we feel it's been a fantastic sponsorship vehicle for us. But we've sort of conducted a bit of a marketing review, and feel that, you know, the basically the sponsorship has run its course. And we're going to focus on other sort of areas in terms of our marketing strategy.
What has racing done for Investec?
I think racing has done a fantastic job of putting Investec on the map. When Investec first started sponsoring, I think it's fair to say very few people in England had heard of us, and through the rugby, cricket and the Derby sponsorship, it's established us as one of the leading financial institutions in the city. And I think we've also helped Epsom and the Derby receive mainstream press coverage sort of off the racing pages, and that was always our objectives, was to obviously target the racing industry but also achieve coverage through PR and the sponsorship in the non-racing media as well, and taking adverts in major tube stations and on the, you know, major advertising sites as you come into London.
To the wider world, to perhaps those who haven't been following this closely, it will seem as though COVID-19 has claimed another high-profile commercial relationship. Is that in fact the case or not?
No, not at all. COVID-19 had nothing to do with this. We've been talking to the Jockey Club about an amicable sort of finish to the sponsorship for the last sort of year or so, and, you know, have done an agreement. I mean, obviously it is sad because we wanted our last Derby to be a real celebration of what we feel has been a hugely successful partnership with the Jockey Club and Epsom Downs in particular. And I know Investec are very keen to thank the racing industry and the racing media for everything they've done for us over the 12-year sponsorship, because it's been a fantastic experience. But I think everyone knows that sponsorships do run their course. You know, like with the rugby and the Autumn Internationals, you know, we've just finished sponsoring the GB women's hockey team and had huge success with them, winning gold at the Olympics. And so I think it is fair to say that racing is a fantastic sport for a brand to sponsor. And 12 years is a long period of time for any business.
The Derby's only had three sponsors over the last four decades, EverReady, Vodafone, and now Investec. How difficult do you think it will be for the sport to get a major blue chip sponsor for their most important flat race?
The Derby is, you know, one of the most famous races in the world, if not the most famous flat race in the world. And I'm sure the Jockey Club will do, you know, their very best and find someone in the next sort of few months. I mean, I think it obviously the market is a very tough one at the moment. You know, I think obviously brands will be fairly guarded in terms of doing big sponsorships, but equally the Derby would be such a big asset to any company looking to promote themselves like we did. And obviously the royal patronage is a massive asset. And Her Majesty the Queen's support is, you know, in terms of the additional cachet of the association is very hard to put a figure on. I mean, it's those sort of money you can't buy experiences.
If a major bookmaker came along tomorrow and offered the Jockey Club a lot of money to sponsor the Derby, do you think they'd take it?
That's not for me to say, Nick. Obviously, it's up to the Jockey Club. But, you know, the betting industry is a huge part of British racing. British racing needs bookmakers, and bookmakers need racing. I mean, I know Unibet are obviously the official betting partner of the Derby at the moment. So there is a bookmaker involved already, but you know, it's obviously up to the Jockey Club in terms of, I'm sure they'll hopefully have, you know, lots of different conversations with lots of different brands.
Well, Jono, it has been a terrific sponsorship. Thanks so much for your time, and look forward to catching up with you soon.
Thanks very much, Nick.
Jono Spence there. Well, I'm joined now to discuss further by Jeff Randall, formerly of Sky and the BBC, renowned business correspondent, and also a non-executive director at Sandown Park Racecourse. Jeff, thanks for joining me. The timing could hardly be more unfortunate, could it?
No, it doesn't look good. Clearly, many companies around the world will be looking at their marketing budgets. Their businesses have been hammered, and they'll be thinking, where can we save money? And sponsorship will be one of those right in the front line. So finding a new sponsor with big money will be more difficult in these circumstances. There's something else as well, Nick, and that is, even if a business has prospered during COVID, and many have, their management teams will be thinking, do we really want to be associated with the magnificent triviality of racing at a time when tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of people are dying? It may not seem tasteful.
How difficult do you think it is to attract blue chip sponsors to horse racing, particularly now, given the uncertainty surrounding the country's attitude towards gambling?
Well, that does make it more difficult, but let's put this into perspective, Nick. You know, I go back a long way in the sport. And when a big name sponsor drops a flagship race, it always feels like an end of the world moment. I can remember Hennessy pulling out of its great chase at Newbury, likewise Whitbread at Sandown. I can remember Martell dropping the Grand National, and everybody said, oh, they'll never find another sponsor like that. And yet they always do. Look, the Derby is not any old race. It's something very, very special. And I do believe there will be a blue chip name out there somewhere that will be appropriate. It's a very difficult time. It's a tough challenge, but I would be amazed if the newish CEO of the Jockey Club doesn't come up with something by this time next year.
That is Delia Bushell, who's had significant corporate experience and broadcast experience as well at Sky and BT. Jeff, we've been competing for sponsorship with other sports in the last couple of decades. Given that racing was fast out of the blocks with its COVID response relative to other sports, do you think that puts it in a stronger position when it comes to trying to get some of the sponsorship pound now?
Yes, it does. I mean, the thing for racing is, if you look back over many, many years of flagship sponsorships, you normally need the chairman or the CEO of the company to be interested in racing. I mean, that was certainly true of Bernard Cantor at Investec. It was true of Gordon White, who ran Hanson, which owned Eveready. It was true of Ernest Harrison, the founder of Vodafone, which sponsored the Derby. And Ernest Harrison, of course, was a member of the Jockey Club and the owner of that fantastic sprinter, Polish Patriot. So if I were Delia, I'd be looking for a boss who loves horse racing. I'd be starting there. Because if you can find that person, then there is a case to be made, both commercially and in sporting terms.
Jeff, thanks so much.
You're very welcome.
So my thanks to Jono Spence and to Jeff Randall. Rishi Prasad is with me as we take a canter through what we can enjoy this weekend. We talked Enable and the Forerunner King George a lot this week, Rish, but I'd like to get you to put your Friday button on it.
I'm a bit tired of the conversation about how many runners we've got in the race. Something's happened in funny times and four runners, okay, but they're four very good horses. Obviously they're all Group One winners, and a couple of them have won two fantastic races in the Irish Derby and the Derby, and the other horse is clearly a top class mile and a half, mile and a quarter horse. So and then we've got the mighty Enable. So it's a good race, and it's a fascinating contest, no matter what people say about the size of the field, because you've got three Aidan O'Brien horses against one John Gulston trained runner. And I love the quotes that John Gulston has come out with in the last 24 hours, saying that apart from Ryan Moore, the other two jockeys, Oisin Murphy and William Buick, ride quite a lot for me. So I don't foresee any shenanigans or something to that effect. But I'm fascinated by how it will all unfold. What will Frankie Dettori do? I know it's just four runners, but will he go on and lead? I personally think that wouldn't be such a bad thing, because she can lead. She's done it before. And I think she's the best horse in the race, and I think she'll win. But I would love to know what the Ballydore conversation will be before the race and what they plan to do, because that would be fascinating to be a fly on the wall for that.
I think what they'd like to happen is for Sovereign to go on, Anthony van Dijk to sit second, Enable to sit third, and Ryan Moore with a target on Frankie Dettori's back. But I suspect it won't pan out quite as straightforward as that.
Well, that'd be too predictable, wouldn't it? That would be too predictable if they went for what everyone's expecting, I think. And I think they'll probably want to catch Frankie Dettori unaware. But that seems to be the likelihood of the most, sorry, the most likely outcome of when they come out the gates. But I don't think whatever they try to do will stop Enable. I think she's the best horse in the race. And I think the fact that she needed that run in the Eclipse and there wasn't much between her and Japan at the end, I expect the distance between the two of them to be rather more significant come the end of the King George with her in front.
Can we talk about Tuesday's Goodwood Cup? I'm going to give this a good thrash again on Monday, but Stradivarius against Santiago, conceding £15 to a Group 1 Classic winning three-year-old. John Gosden describes it as the toughest task of his career. Do you agree?
I would say on paper, yes. Personally, if we go back to Kew Gardens beating him at Ascot last Champions Day, that was the toughest task of his career since his elevation to top stayer, personally, because I thought Kew Gardens might have had the better of him anyway. But yes, it's a massive task for Stradivarius. But how wonderful is it that we've got a horse that has won the Irish Derby, a Royal Ascot winner, Irish Derby winner, coming to the Goodwood Cup to take on a top class stayer, one of the best stayers that we've seen in recent times. You know, the COVID situation has caused all sorts of issues, but one of the benefits is thrown up is this anomaly to the normal course of proceedings, where we've got a horse like Santiago lining up against Stradivarius. I think it's fascinating. I personally think Stradivarius has got too much speed for him. For Santiago, and I think that his turn of foot will prove decisive despite the disparity in the weights. What do you think?
I think Santiago might win. I think Santiago might win. I think he has got a turn of foot. I love the way he sighed through the pack in the Irish Derby, admittedly.
It wasn't a great pack.
It wasn't, but nor were the horses that Stradivarius beat in the Gold Cup, with due respect to his own brilliance that day.
That's true. Yeah, the Gold Cup, he did win by miles, but they weren't the best bunch of stayers that we've ever seen, correct?
So I will side with Santiago, and I'm very happy if I'm proved wrong. I know you wanted to give Mahartha a nod in Sussex Stakes. I think he'll start favourite.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he does. Yeah, absolutely. I want to give him a nod because I'm a huge fan of Marcus Trigoni. And over the years, after he won the Derby with Sir Percy and not worked closely, but having done some work with him and Martin Dwyer when we were with the Beeb, really, really got to know them quite well. And I was so disappointed by the way things had gone for Marcus Trigoni. And it's not pity. Marcus doesn't want pity. But the way things had gone in the last few years, with him struggling to have the success that he once did when he was young, when he had those lovely horses like Nayef and Mubtaka, etc., it is fantastic to see someone's belief in themselves and their own ability bearing fruit after a significant period of time. And I'm really hoping that Mahartha delivers at Group 1 level for him. Yes, it's a great race in its own right, and we have some fantastic horses in Siskin and Cameco. But I think it would mean a lot to Marcus Trigoni, having seen what he's gone through the last few years and not operating at the level that he once did. But yet he never doubted his ability to train a good horse. I'd love to see it pay off in the Sussex Stakes with Mahartha. And I think it will. I think he's got the best turn of foot in the race.
Just two of the highlights we can look forward to. A glorious Goodwood next week. And this podcast will be coming to you from Goodwood next week as well, Tuesday through Friday, which I'm thoroughly looking forward to. And I'm hoping to be able to call on the services of Rishi as well once or twice.
100%. Yeah, there for you.
Always there for me. We've been talking a lot about ownership in the last couple of weeks because it has been something of a hot topic. And I'm delighted to say that I've been catching up with a man who has been recently re-elected to the board of the Racehorse Owners Association, who in part support this programme. He's also the man behind Kennet Valley Thoroughbreds and Hot to Trot Racing, Sam Hoskin. And I began by asking him how challenging the last 6 weeks had been.
Good question, Nick. Very good question. Life has obviously changed hugely. I think we've been enormously grateful for having racing back up and running, and that is hugely key. I think just the appreciation in June of just having racing, having Royal Ascot. And to be honest, I didn't feel that we had many syndicate members during that time who were really sort of shouting from the rooftops to sort of that we must get back on course, or we must get to trainers. I think everyone was very understanding and everyone was enjoying the racing. And now kind of another sort of 3 weeks onwards, I think staff people now are just getting a little bit itchy and just want to get out. And I think racing is going and everything's opening up. And I think as other things are opening up, as the pressure sort of is increasing, that we'd like to get out a bit more as well.
Do you feel you as an association are doing what you can to try and make the deal for owners and others on a race course better in the short term?
I do, yes. I think a lot of people are looking at each other. I think as in probably with a lot of industries, perception is seems to be high above. And I think everyone's from BHA down are trying to do the right thing. But I think time has come, I think, where really common sense has got to be applied. I think we've all got to discuss and say, look, well, if we are going to have pubs opening, etc., if we are going to have trial crowds, etc., I think from an owner's perspective, I think we're able to show a little bit more flexibility on the owners. I think the ownership experience so far has been great to get owners back on course. I should add, I haven't actually been yet. We took a very an approach to let the syndicate members go. That two owners are allowed, and we thought, well, we should let the syndicate members go. Why should we go? And in any case, the travelling head lad or the trainer is videoing the jockey after every run, and that's something we've asked all of our trainers to do. So I haven't actually been, but the feedback we've had is that it's a pretty limited experience, and it's quite tough when people are going and then they're told they can't get anywhere near the paddock, etc. But in other walks of life, of course, we still go into the supermarket, and of course now we're going to the pub. I'm not sure whether there are obviously a strict rules to being adhered to, but I think suddenly some common sense really needs to be used, and hopefully they can sort of pass the guidelines at the same time.
Without doubt, you've embraced new technologies. I noticed that after your Royal Ascot winner for Kennet Valley Thoroughbred, Sir Busker, you had a whole load of your members all together having a party on Zoom with the trainer and the jockey, which was lovely to see. How's your retention been? How's your retention of all these important syndicate members been through this difficult time?
Well, to be honest, all of our team with Kennet Valley and Hots Trot, they all pay up front at the start of the year. So at the moment, we've been okay. And the feedback, touch wood, we've had, they all seem to be happy with what we've been doing for them. But at the same time, there are people saying that unless they can get back on course or they can to get doing things again, they could be doubts for next year. So I think if we need to be able to sell something when we're this autumn, and sort of probably the next sort of couple of months for the jumping and in the autumn for the flat, when we're starting to sell next year's dream, we really need the help of being able to say, look, everything's open now, you can go racing, we can have stable visits. I mean, that is, stable visits are something that we've been hosting up until now, visits for up to six people, and I'm hoping from sort of start of August that obviously socially distancing measures adhered to, but we should be able to have visits with a few more people outside. It is important that people, when people are actively buying into the next stage, then they have to be able to think that they're going to get some bang for their buck. And dare I say, they haven't had as much bang for their buck as we'd like so far this season.
Now, the reason you're here is obviously because you're a very important man, but more importantly, because you've got a runner tomorrow at Ascot. Dance Fever, trained by Clive Cox, with whom you won the race last year. Is she going to win?
He's a lovely colt. And he's got two vital components as well. Yeah. He is a lovely colt. I don't think the form of his first three, he won his first three from three last season, but he didn't probably need to, he didn't beat anything particular with note. But if you watch his debut back last year, you could see he was going to be a very exciting horse. He ran at Windsor a few weeks ago. It was Eclipse Day, wasn't it? It was about 3.5 weeks ago. And he was quite unlucky. He was on the rail. He just couldn't get out, and I'm not saying he'd have beaten the Johnson winner, he was certainly finished on the bridle, and I think we are cautiously pretty optimistic. Clive's been saying all spring he's been working really well with some proper horses. He thinks he's well handicapped, but it is a race probably full of well handicapped horses, so cautiously very optimistic. But as I said, you could get it. It's a kind of race. He could come third or fourth, and time might tell that we face an absolutely impossible task against some group horse. But then again, we might have a few pounds in hand. So I'd be disappointed if he's not in the first four out of eight.
Sam, I will endeavour to get the sex of your horses right next time we speak. But for the moment, thank you very much.
Great, thanks.
My thanks to Sam Hoskins. Rishi is still with me, and all that remains now is for Rishi to send you away with a winner.
Yeah, I really like my selection today, more so than last week, Nick, I should say.
Still running.
I didn't run badly, but didn't make us any money. The 335 at Beverly. I'm going to Beverly again. I'm going for Dan King of Alan King's in that race. I don't need to tell you about the form that Alan King has been in. You know about that. But what I will tell you is that Dan King's got an outstanding pedigree. He's by Dan Silly. He's a grandson of the great Time Charter, and he ran lots of black type in the pedigree. He's rated 58. And he ran an encouraging race first time up on his handicap debut at Leicester. I'm sure he's going to. He looked like he needed it. And if he is not better than 58, I'd be shocked. So I hope that this three-year-old has a bit in hand.
Richie, thanks so much. Thank you for listening as well. As I said, we will be back on Monday on the eve of the glorious Qatar Goodwood Festival. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Google, SoundCloud and Spotify, and then Nick Luck Daily will just magically pop up and remind you of its existence each and every morning. What could be better? And if you are enjoying this, I would love you to rate us, review us and to subscribe. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you again next week. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.